know that in a recent survey by Lifeway Research of over 1,000 pastors, church leaders, that only 89% of what they would consider to be very conservative Protestant pastors spoke about abortion, and more often than not, they used the term unborn. And only 79% said they addressed the topic of homosexual marriage. And both of these topics came up usually just about once a year, if that often. This is Long Gospel. I'm Roland Lettner.
I'm Tom Baker.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Your calls and questions are always welcome here on Long Gospel. This survey came from an article I found in the Christian Post online, Tom. And it's under the headline, Survey Examines Protestant Preaching on Marriage and Abortion. Newly released data from Lifeway describes the beliefs of Protestant pastors on the sanctity of human life, biblical marriage, religious liberty, and how often they discuss these issues. Now, I would think, if you use the term evangelical, that that is almost synonymous with pro-life. But yet this survey would show that these very conservative churches talk about abortion only once a year from the pulpit, if that much.
Probably it's because they've got a lot of people in their congregations who would have a different point of view. If you've had a daughter who was raped, for example, and she chose an abortion, how many times are you going to be bringing that up during the year, knowing you have a family like that? I mean, the guilt of abortion is just so huge. Although I did bring it up on a Life Sunday, and anyone listening to Long Gospel over the years, and AIM and KFUO Radio will realize we bring it up a lot. We have guests on who speak about it because we think it is the issue that's going to divide this country even more than it is divided. And I think that's we're finding that out with the health care situation.
Well, is it divided because the church seems shy to talk about these things? Should we be talking about this every Sunday? Or, this is the question I pose to you, Tom, if a pastor is doing their job and preaching the Word of God rightly, dividing law and gospel, do we pick this up as a matter of natural understanding that abortion is wrong? Does the pastor have to stand there and say, thou shalt not have an abortion?
We're living in an age today, as we just mentioned earlier, where young people think that they should be living together. But the pastor this morning was making the point that they have found out that if you live together with a person you're about to marry for a period of time, the chances for a divorce rise exponentially. It's very high. A lot of people end up getting divorced. And I can understand why. Because when you're living together outside of marriage, you've already now agreed you're living with someone who's willing to break the laws of God. I mean, that's just going to be felt. And now that you're married to him or her, and all of a sudden they're gone for a night and you're not sure where they were, if they did it with you, why are they going to do it with someone else? And it doesn't surprise me at all that once you start an illegal marriage living together, that that marriage is going to flounder on just the slightest kinds of doubts.
And the next thing you know, you've got a golf club stuck in the back window of your SUV.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I prefer probably having a tiger chase me. But ooh, be that as it may, there's something where a great example of how rumors can get started where everybody has a different opinion of what happened to Tiger Woods. We're speaking about the time that he actually left his house, got in a serious car accident, just driving out of his driveway, and his wife rescued him by breaking the window with a golf club. And there's all kinds of things that are being said about that. But people just love stuff like that. Martin Luther put it this way, we love to hear bad things about other people because it makes us feel good about ourselves. And he was really dead on. I mean, that's why so many people love the gossip columns and why those books at the grocery store right near the end, people really dive into them, at least read them, and are glad for long lives so they can read maybe the whole article. But be that as it may, we do have a situation. One of the stats I found really interesting was among liberal pastors, only 25% of them mentioned abortion once a year, but 53% of them mentioned homosexuality. Now, the problem with the survey, it doesn't indicate how they mentioned it. I'm quite sure that they were for it. And I'm confident that that number is going to be going up percentage-wise among liberal pastors, because homosexuals are so strong in getting their point across that if they find a pastor who is neutral on it, who shouldn't be, they're going to make a big point about it. And since liberal pastors, by and large, aren't afraid of God, they may not be afraid of homosexuals, but there's no doubt about it that that probably is going to rise.
Well, if pastors don't teach about this, we're left to figure it out on our own. Now, while you were out of town this weekend, they had a big protest down at the Cathedral Basilica down on Lindell here in St. Louis. And it was people that were upset that the new bishop here in St. Louis had given $10,000 to help support the pro-traditional marriage movement in California, you know, Proposition 8.
Hmm.
And they were protesting this. And they interviewed someone who said, well, why is the church involved in two people who love each other committing their lives together? Now, that's someone who's been taught something about what marriage is.
Yeah, there's a perfect example of how you destroy an argument like that. You just look at the person and say, yeah, I feel the same way. I'm 50 years old, a father, and I really love my four-year-old daughter.
Careful.
And that's the point.
Yeah.
That's all you have to say. You just look at them and they'll say, they'll be against that. And you'll just look at them and say, now, wait a minute, then you're in the wrong protest line. What you do, you just absolutely destroy such arguments by showing the inconsistency of people. A lot of people argue not because they know why they're arguing. They're arguing simply because they don't like the situation. But when you start asking them what's wrong with it, I just love having those conversations because they have no grounds upon which they can stand. And whatever ground they choose, you can show that they're totally inconsistent with that in other areas of their life.
30 years ago, maybe a little bit more, there was a little bit of a dispute in the Lutheran Church about how you looked at the Bible and how you read the Bible. And is a lot of this, when you talk about you weren't sure how they were preaching on the topic of homosexuality...
Yes.
What did you call it? The some kind of a critical...
Historical critical method,
yeah.
Which I like to refer to as the hysterical critical method.
Is that where this misunderstanding comes, that people have just chosen to read the Bible in their
I think
own way?
It's... I want to think the way God thinks. From a human point of view, that's the way it appears it happened. But from God's point of view, they had a different situation. People wanted to have homosexuality legalized. And so they found a way of interpreting the Bible in such a way that that would be allowed. So they go into the Bible already with a preconceived conclusion. And the way they were able to do this is they now look at the Bible the way you and I look at our daily newspaper, at least the editorial sections where they're having their own opinions. We don't believe that as hard news. We say, okay, that's their opinion. Just read about the things about Tiger Woods. Which option are you going to take? You don't know what the real story is. Well, that's what they say about Jesus. It says Jesus walked on the water. These biblical scholars, and I have that with six quotes around it, they say, no, he was walking on the shore, but the waves were so high, it looked like he was walking on the water. Or when the demons went out, went into the pigs, and the pigs fell off a cliff and drowned. No, he wasn't a demoniac. He was an epileptic. He went into a seizure, and that scared the pigs. Now, all this comes about because they have a preconceived notion of what they want not to believe in the Bible. And I believe that from God's point of view, men therefore create systems to reread the Bible in such a way to satisfy their own selfish and sinful desires.
So when you preach on a Sunday morning, is it wrong then to say you must believe this or get out?
It's always wrong to say that simply because, boy, if there's anything that postmodernism has helped us to see, and that's the idea that truth is different for every person. When I say you must believe this or get out, what if I'm talking about creation evolution? I mean, you must believe creation if you're a Bible believer. I mean, that's the only option. But we don't say and get out. In other words, that's a much more private conversation you'd have with people. And people have come to me. You said something in the sermon I'm not sure I agreed with, Pastor Tom. And we sit down and we kind of go through it. And if they, a lot of times they've misunderstood me. So I would hate to say something, because what if I said something and misspoke and half the congregation gets up and walks out? And I say, what are they leaving? Well, you said this. No, I didn't mean that. So from the point of view of what God says, there are certain beliefs that one has to hold to in order to be saved. But it doesn't mean everything in the Bible you have to hold to the way God understands it. Because even some of us, for the longest time, I was mixed up on a couple of understandings of parables. And it wasn't until I got out of the seminary that I found somebody to help teach it in a way that I really agree with it now, in a way that I used not to teach it. So there's nobody who has perfect understanding of every part of the Bible. So I'd hesitate to use that in such a way. But if we're talking about homosexuality or abortion, you would say this is God's understanding, that this is an abomination.
So why is homosexuality such a big deal in the church?
It's a big deal simply because you now have a whole denomination, and more than one, who are allowing people of that persuasion to become pastors, which now lead little children into a lifestyle that could lead them to hell. If you're an unrepentant homosexual and aware it's a sin from God's point of view, you may go to hell. And so it's kind of like, why is the church really concerned about heroin? We may not teach that much about heroin, but we teach about illegally obtaining drugs, because can you imagine having churches that taught children that heroin is good because it puts you into a different frame of mind, a more spiritual frame of mind? That's what some of the hippies used to think. And we would be totally against that. Well, homosexuality, abortion is even worse, because there's not a lot of hurt just to the woman who has the abortion, but obviously to the male or female who is aborted.
Well, one of the arguments made is, well, we don't stone people anymore. We've become evolved from that way of thinking, biblically. So why can't we just evolve to understanding that people can have relationships?
Well, we've evolved in where we will actually put to death a person who would kill the President of the United States. And that's nowhere in the Bible. There's no teaching in the Bible that the President of the United States, if he's killed, you should put him to death. So I would just argue, obviously, where we're talking in an area of civil laws that change from time to time, and just because there's nothing about giving capital punishment to somebody who kills the President, that doesn't mean we can't do it. And it also doesn't mean that just because in those days they stoned an adulteress, that we have to do it today. We can change and fit the way we consider justice from God's point of view, so that the laws of the land continue to be God's will, depending on the situation.
It seems to me that even though it's a more prevalent problem in the church, we don't seem to address infidelity. You know, people who are involved with other people outside of their marriage.
Yeah,
and we don't seem to address divorce in the same way that we want to address abortion or homosexuality. Why do we pick and choose these things? Are some sins better than others?
No, I think the infidelity, yeah, I can only say what I used to preach. And just saw Dr. House last night. It's a repeat from long ago. I've got about 30 of these I got to watch. But anyway, it was about a man who had left his wife for his girlfriend, but then came down with cancer. And he went back to his wife to help him through the procedure. His girlfriend couldn't. She was too wacky. And once he, actually the doctor gave him part of his own liver to help him get through it. And then he got through it. And the doctor came in after he was feeling better. They were all set to let him go. He said, "Where's your wife?" He says, "Well, you know, there's some people you want around you when you die. And then there's other people you want around you as you live." And he was back with his girlfriend. And the doctor was really disappointed in that. Because there's kind of, but this guy was so self-absorbed that you wonder if the doctor, if he had known he was going to do that, would have even given him his liver. But that's why people do this. Out of self-absorption, they just want to be, they consider marriage to be something, and then when it's not that way, then they see where it could be, and they run after that, and they're not keeping word. I would not really trust a person who practices infidelity in a trusting position. I know a lot of people said that if the President of the United States, when he was in that position, that he could still be a good leader. No, I would not trust him with much at all, because if you're willing to break the vows to your wife, then you're certainly willing to break anything else.
Well, you know what they said about people who expressed that thought?
What did they say?
They said, well, you're from a different time. You're not living in the real world.
And once more, you see, if they were true, that's what God would say. See, I always measure what anybody says as an excuse. Would God say that? And God would never say that, because this is the real world, and it's no different from the time of Abraham. To cheat on your wife as a sin is just as bad. Now, in those days, they did allow dual marriage and this kind of thing, but we don't allow that today in the United States. I don't know of a state that does allow that, so that would not be appropriate. But yeah, you cheat on your wife. In fact, the pastor this morning, he said the most traumatic event in his whole life was the day his parents divorced and his father walked out of the house.
Hmm.
And he said divorce just kills children. And the other thing he said, which I really agreed with, is that there is no marriage that cannot be fixed. I mean, you could say there's a huge division between the two of them, but with Christ in the center of it, and I've seen it happen, where one of my members was actually living with his mistress. He was my Lutheran member, and she was Presbyterian. I went and visited them, and I just talked to them about what they were doing at all. I brought in a law gospel verse. I can't remember which one it was, and talked about what Christ had done for them. 3 weeks later, he left her, and they left by agreement. He went back to his wife, had another baby with his wife, and they still sent me Christmas cards. And when I saw that happen, then I really believed. But I should have known that ahead of time, because there was a guy named Saul walking around murdering Christians, and God was able to bring him around. And so I don't laugh when they talk about these Muslims, that they're totally not able to be converted. We're in Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, and the Word of God is converting many of them to Christianity right now.
And you're talking about Concordia Mission Society.
Yeah, the Concordia Mission Society, with which I am affiliated.
Why are you there? Why aren't you in the Bronx or East L.A. or Mexico City? Why has your group chosen to be there, of all places?
It just so happened that we had, it was a Pastor Bittner, who had a farm of, what are these long radio things called? Not AM, FM, but where you can go across countries.
Shortwave.
Shortwave. He had a farm of shortwave antennas that were so sophisticated that at times the armed forces asked to use them because they couldn't communicate with their people overseas. And he began to talk to people over there about the faith, and he found many Christians. And then when the walls fell and communism was no longer in control of Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan, we sent over missionaries and others, and the thing just took off. Almaty was the main station. Pastor Meyer was there for over a decade, and he stayed there. And right now we have 18 churches and a big cathedral in downtown Bishkek. And that's because if they took a survey in Kazakhstan or Kyrgyzstan, getting back to our point here, 100% will be talking about the things that these people seem to hesitate about. Partly because they got to know us through our medical vans, where 100,000 people have been taken care of over the last 10 years. Actually, more than, I know the number was 250,000, freely, at no cost. The government loves us, even though it's Muslim, and has permitted us to do evangelism and these churches. So why we chose that is quite easy. We didn't. God did. And why he moved me into the position of Director of Development of CMS, or if you want to know more about this, you can go to our website. It's lawgospel.com. And you can click on Concordia Mission Society, and also click on the materials that we use. And boy, we talk a lot about immorality in those materials.
Well, we should probably mention Peter Kurowski.
Yes, he's one of our finest writers. We do have, at the website, you look under resources, and you'll find, I think, 6 of Peter Kurowski's offerings, and he's writing 2 more right now. In fact, I just got an order for his Everlasting Angel and the Mountains of Fire and the Everlasting Angel. It's a series of novels and the real magic of 10 more of each.
Endorsed by Erica Lettner.
And I know your daughter.
She can't wait for the next one. She loves those.
Yeah. We're doing the best we can, but we've got some other priorities right now we're working on. But go to lawgospel.com, and you'll see a lot of the things there. And we even have a post to KFUO Radio so that when you go there, you can download programs that you haven't heard.
Do you still put your sermons up on the web?
I do it on a blog. It's called lawgospel.com/blog. I don't do the sermon. I've never been able to take anybody's sermon, but I attempt to give a law and gospel insight each week. Like for yesterday's sermon, which was the first Sunday in Advent, I just couldn't help but Jeremiah 33, the Lord is our righteousness. And what I preached on was when you get to heaven, you have to be totally righteous in God's sight, or he will not let you in. You have to be totally righteous. So I began by asking the congregation. I always begin with getting them confused. And my question was, are you righteous enough to go to heaven right now? Put your hand up. And nobody put their hand up, and then I put my hand up.
Isn't that an expression of humility?
No.
People don't
want to
brag.
It's really the old Adam. From God's point of view, the old Adam is stopping them to remember. It's a question of ignorance and really the purpose of the cross of the Christ. So the point I made then is, according to Jeremiah, God is going to send a branch of righteousness who will execute judgment and righteousness in the earth. And that's how Judah, Jerusalem, and the people of God will be saved, and he's the Lord our righteousness. So when you get to heaven, if you're a believer, you're wearing the robe of righteousness, right out of Isaiah. And God's going to look at you and say, come into my heaven. And you're going to say, I'm not worthy. And he said, I already know that. That's why I sent my son. And then the son is going to be standing beside him and welcome you. You're going to get to heaven the same way you came into the church, by grace, through faith in Jesus Christ and his righteousness alone.
And you did nothing to earn it.
Well, that's
which is what's really the confusing bit.
That's the other point I made, is that you can't tell somebody steps to follow to be saved. You just simply express what Christ did, and the Holy Spirit takes those words. It's called the gospel, which are the promises connected to the cross and resurrection, and he creates faith in a person. In fact, I pointed out in Jeremiah 33, the sentences begin, at that time I will cause, he shall execute. He shall execute righteous. And then Judah will be saved. Those are passives. So they don't do anything to be saved. It's kind of like you're looking at a baby that is an orphan and you decide to adopt it. The baby does nothing but receives the righteousness of the family and the inheritance and everything.
Tomorrow, Travis Scholl from here at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. Pope had an interesting meeting at the Vatican about how you can find salvation through art. We'll talk with him about that on the next Long Gospel.
God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel with Tom Baker and Roland Lettner, Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105, or at this email address, lawgospel@lawgospel.com.